I hate to tell you this, but it turns out that traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat. I know, very disgusting. Not only is it extremely gross, but it also leads to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding, such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth and require up to 3 times less laundry. If you get hot at night, you'll appreciate Miracle Made's self-cooling properties, which makes use of silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA. If it's good enough for the astronauts, it's good enough for me. They are thermoregulating and designed to keep you at the perfect temperature all night long. It makes a huge difference in getting better sleep every night. If you hate sleeping in bacteria, which I'm sure you do, or you're looking to get rid of your worn and uncomfortable bedding, you should check out Miracle Made. You'll feel like you're tucked into a luxurious hotel fancy bedding situation, but it'll be a lower cost than some of those other brands. Go to trymiracle.com/thestacks to try Miracle Made sheets for you or a lucky loved one. Order today and save over 40%. Plus, if you use our promo code THESTACKS at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product that it's backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you aren't 100% satisfied, you will get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiraclemade.com/thestacks and use the code THESTACKS to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/thestacks to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. Welcome to another episode of The Stacks. I am your host, Tracy Thomas, and today our guest is journalist and author Vanessa McGrady, whose brand new book, Rock Needs River, a memoir about a very open adoption, was released just this month. If you've listened and loved The Stacks, you can get more from the show by joining The Stacks Pack and receiving inside access and perks like the virtual book club and a lot more. If you go to patreon.com/thestacks, you can contribute as little as $1 a month and rest easy knowing your money is going to support an independent podcast you love. So check out the Stacks Pack at patreon.com/thestacks. If you prefer supporting the show with one-time contributions, go to paypal.me/thestackspod. To stay up to date on The Stacks, make sure you're following us on our social media and going to our website, thestackspodcast.com. Links to all of our social media accounts are in the show notes. You'll also find links to everything Vanessa and I talk about on today's show. If you shop through those links, The Stacks will earn a small commission and it comes at no extra cost to you. So it's a total win-win. Now is a great time to rate and review this podcast. These reviews help us climb the charts and they break through the algorithms to get us to new listeners. So if you haven't yet, I would so appreciate if you would take a few moments to write us a review right now. Our most recent review comes from Horses4M1292. And here's what they say. So thankful to have found Tracy and The Stacks. This podcast has already introduced me to amazing literature and given me the tools to think through complex issues and questions. Plus, Tracy is funny and so honest. I feel like I finally found the perfect corner of the podcast world and I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much, Horses, for M1292, and thank you to the rest of you who have written us reviews. And if you haven't yet, go ahead and do it right now. In the interest of full transparency, I just want to touch on one quick thing. Today's episode is a lot about adoption, and you're going to hear me use incorrect terminology. I refer to adoptive parents as opposed to parents, and I refer to parents instead of calling them birth or biological parents. So I just wanted to clear that up now. I've learned since the recording, but I didn't want to change the mistakes that I'd made. I just wanted to give it a quick acknowledgement now. Okay, let's dive into the episode with our guest, Vanessa McGrady. All right, I am here today with Vanessa McGrady, who is the author of a brand new book called Rock Needs River, which is her memoir of a very open adoption. Vanessa is an award-winning journalist and communications strategist. Vanessa, welcome to The Stacks.
Thank you. It's so thrilling to be here, Tracy.
I'm so excited that you're here. So I just gave you kind of like a professional intro, but I always like to ask people to give us maybe like just tell us about yourself a little bit.
I'm a mom, first and foremost. I'm a writer. I'm a daughter. I live in Glendale, California. What else would you like to know?
Well, tell me a little bit about what a communication strategist does.
So some of us in the journalism world have had to make the shift to work that earns more money.
Got it.
So I do help brands and I help companies with their content and with editing. And a lot of it I have found is really the exact same thing that I would write for Forbes or for a magazine or something else, only it's for a bank or, you know, for a spa or something. So it's the same quality work, but just for multiple times the money.
Got it. Yeah. Amazing. Exactly. I was on your website and you've written so many articles. You're constantly publishing. I mean, you have, like, Vanessa's website is VanessaMcGrady.com, which we'll link to in the show notes. But it's like financial and then it's beauty and then it's travel. And it's like so amazing because I don't often think of journalists as being able to write such a variety of things.
Well, that's the great thing about being a journalist, yeah, is that if you're curious about something or if you're interested in something or if you're really mad about something, you can write about it.
What's the last thing you were really mad about that you wrote about?
Oh my gosh. Okay. There's a couple things I'm thinking of, but I'll say the one that was really upsetting to me, all of a sudden I was noticing when my daughter was younger that people were sexist in little tiny ways that I called micro bullshit.
Sure.
So in ways, you know, the karate teacher would tell the girls to smile, but then he would tell the boys, you know, like, oh, you're getting so strong and things like that during their award ceremony.
Totally.
Or, you know, when Payless was selling shoes, they would advertise boys' shoes for adventuring and girls' shoes for being a princess. And so things like that. So I wrote about that for Jezebel.
Oh, my gosh, that's awesome.
And another one was I went to this big conference and several men who were speakers at the conference would make this joke about how their wife spends all their money. And it was so infuriating to hear. And then I couldn't figure out, like, well, exactly why is this bothering me? So I really had to dig deep into how sexist that was and how ridiculous that was. And then, of course, I wrote about this for Forbes.com when I was a columnist there. But people were really upset that I was upset about this because it just really was a hot button for a lot of men.
Sure.
And saying, oh, it's just a joke. But I mean, anything can be just a joke. Sure. A racial slur is just a joke.
Right.
You know, those kind of things. It's just, I mean, so all of that I feel is kind of goes under the category of micro bullshit. So that's basically what's getting me right now. So I write about that.
It's interesting that you said that after having your daughter, that that's what you noticed. That, like, your whole life as a woman, you didn't notice it as much, or just that, like, because it was children and, like, marketed towards children, that's what kind of picked up your attention?
You know, I think I got clearer.
Got it.
On it. I did notice it. Like, there were things, there's a story in the book, actually, that I, you know, worked on this great presentation and I was, you know, working and I was showing it to a bunch of men and everyone was really happy with it. And then one of them just made this little joke about, now you can go back to the kitchen.
Oh, that's right.
And, you know, and that's such a little thing. And I laughed along with it.
Right.
But it's really painful.
But we all do,
you know,
that. It's such an interesting thing. I mean, I shouldn't say we all do that. But I myself have done it and I've seen other people do it. And sometimes in the moment it takes you so off guard that you kind of giggle because you're like, is this guy kidding? Or like, what? But and then afterwards you feel bad about yourself for having encouraged or not said, hey, fuck you, guy. Like,
right.
I just did this amazing presentation. And it's such an interesting, I don't know where that comes from, but I'm curious about it. And I think, like, as a Black woman, I've experienced it both racially and for being a woman. And I mean, my mother is Jewish. And so a lot of people think that it's funny that I'm Black and Jewish. And so, like, people will make, like, little jokes about that too. And I've laughed at it myself. But, you know, I think maybe some of it comes from not wanting to make a bigger deal out of it, like wanting to minimize it because you feel, like, embarrassed or something.
I don't know. I think it's part of a subset of fight, flight, freeze or laugh,
right?
You know, like, you want to diffuse a situation, right, that makes you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, and we're taught to be pleasers. We're not automatically taught as children to say, fuck you, that was wrong.
Right.
So
no, it's true. I love you saying that also people were mad at you for being mad or like for being offended. That's because I feel like that right now in the culture, like especially in politics, is so big. Like someone will do something wrong and someone will say that was bad. And then other people will say, how dare you point that out? Or like, how dare you call that person a racist? Or how dare you say that's sexist? Even though someone made a comment about women getting back in the kitchen. Like that's objectively sexist.
Exactly.
You know? Ugh. Now my mind I know.
Like, let's go take a shower.
Like, let's go talk about sexism and racism and microaggressions or micro bullshit. So you have a book. It comes out, or I guess when this airs, it'll be out. It's called Rock Needs River. And it's the story of how you came to adopt your daughter, Grace. And then it goes into what happened once you had your daughter, Grace. It's so readable. I read it in about a day and a half. It's one of those books where it's just like, I felt like I knew you because you're just kind of talking to your audience, which is really, it's kind of refreshing. I really appreciated just how open and there wasn't a lot of pretense around your book. And it felt like there were things that you said that I maybe didn't agree with, but I was like, that's just her point of view, you know? And like, it felt very comfortable, like a conversation between author and reader, which I really, really appreciated. So congratulations on your book.
Thank you.
The opening of the book, you have like a little letter to your daughter, Grace, where you talk about wanting the book to be something that she can see and read and understand her story better. And I was curious, at what age do you think that she would possibly read the book?
Well, you know, I have read her that letter. Mm-hmm. Right now, she's super excited about the book. She is giving one to her teacher today. Oh. And she's
on the cover.
She's on the cover. That's an Instagram photo. I was wondering. And she's, I think, you know, right now we're still working on Elephant and Piggy books.
Sure.
So,
right. Because she's seven.
She's seven now. I don't know. That's a good question. I think probably, you know, I think kids understand things at their age appropriate levels.
Right.
So if she reads it at 12, she might understand it in a different way than if she reads it at 25.
Sure,
and then
of course.
Then if she reads it at 50, she
right.
might.
That's true for all of us,
yeah,
that we understand it at our age-appropriate level. I just was curious about that because I thought, I knew that she was young now, and I was like, I wonder in Vanessa's mind when she thinks that she'll read it, but she'll probably read it a few times would be my guess.
You know what's funny? My dad was an author too, and he wrote books, and I don't ever remember reading them all the way through. I would sit down with a book and I would read parts of it. So I've probably read the Pritikin Program for Diet and Exercise, you know, 10 times over, but I've never read it actually all the way through. I just would read
sections,
chunks of it. So I don't know if she's going to do the same thing or not. Because it's also like, oh, you know, my mom wrote a book, whatever.
Right. So, there's a little bit of like, my mom's so not cool.
Getting there.
Right. Well, I think that comes later. I mean, that came later for me, like 12. Then I was like, ugh, mom. During your book, or in your book, you have this great line. I don't want to spoil too much of your book, but I do kind of want to give a little bit of info for people. It starts kind of with you becoming an adult. Like you kind of jump in maybe like in your early 20s and you're having like great escapades and living in cabins and like being an adventurer, which I totally love because that's not me. And I was like, ugh, I wish I did that kind of stuff. And then you got pregnant and you have a few miscarriages, correct?
Yes, I had three.
Three. And after the first one, you have this great line where you say, during a crisis, there's always good surprises and bad surprises. And I just love that. I just thought that was so right on. Like even in the worst times, there are things that you are like, oh, that person showed up in a different way than I expected. Or, oh, I learned this about myself that I can take with me. And then there's also obviously things where you're like, that was really shitty and my life is ruined, you know? So I liked you pointing that out. I do want to talk a little bit about miscarriages because I feel like people don't or are uncomfortable or shy or feel embarrassed about it. But that process of having those miscarriages, did you ever feel like, was it an isolating experience for you?
It really was because this was also, I mean, it wasn't that long ago. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, the second and third ones were in the 2000s, early mm-hmm. 2000s. And I think now with so much social media and Twitter, people are tweeting their miscarriages.
Sure.
And so, you know, in that way, you kind of have that community and you're not so alone. But back then, I mean, you would have a miscarriage. And there's no way that you wouldn't know that 10 other people sitting at the table just have a miscarriage. Mm-hmm. And so, but what you do notice are pregnant women and babies and
people, you know, asking people, you, when are you going to have a baby?
Exactly. Or just, you know, still thinking you're pregnant. I remember I had miscarried the first time at 12 weeks. So I had a lot of time to tell people because I'm obviously not a secret keeper. Okay. I remember my uncle Seamus came up to me like with a big bear hug and, "Hey mama, how's that baby doing?" You know, and stuff like that. And I was just like, nope.
And
so, and then, you know, you had to, you know, tell, you know, eventually you have to tell people cause they're going to ask and then they feel bad and, right. You know, it just nobody feels good about that. So,
yeah.
But yes, it felt very isolating. And it also, you know, you have this feeling of like, okay, well, somebody can do something about this. Like, We can fix this. You know,
sure.
I feel like, you know, we can fix anything. You know, if you try hard enough, if you know the right medicine, if you can do the right, you know, doctor thing, you can fix this. And, you know, with a miscarriage, you really can't.
Right. Right. I mean, it's the body's way of, you know, it's unfortunate. It's my husband is an OBGYN. So we actually, I feel lucky because a lot of people that I know who have been through similar experiences, they come to us. And so I feel like I've been gifted this opportunity to be someone who can say, like, I know, I understand, I'm sorry this happened, and, you know, this is part of it. And my husband does it in a medical way, which is probably more reassuring. But I feel that I've been let into, like, kind of a secret society in that way. And I feel like it shouldn't have to be that way. Like, you know, I think it can be so isolating for women and men too, who also, I think, sometimes feel like really left out of the whole process, you know?
Yeah, you know, I just did a story on miscarriages for UCLA, for the health magazine at UCLA. And one thing that I learned, I talked to a lot of people, a lot of doctors, and I found out a lot about the cell. Like, there's almost stuff that happens on the cellular level that has to go exactly right before an embryo can keep growing. And but then also the men, you know, men don't really bond with a child until it's born. I mean, it's sort of like a concept.
Right.
And of course, but they also have their own kinds of disappointment and their own, it's not a physical trauma. It's a different kind of trauma.
Right.
And I think that's often left out of the conversation. And then also people sometimes feel relieved when they have a miscarriage and that needs to be part of the conversation too. Not all pregnancies are wanted.
Right.
And, you know, both people don't always want the pregnancy and that has to be, and sometimes people feel guilty for feeling relieved and you know that's a part of the big conversation too.
Yeah. It's unfortunate that people have to go through miscarriages for any reason because for the women it is a physical trauma, but I'm glad that you're open to talking about it and you talk about it in your book so openly. I think it's really powerful. Okay. Now, after you have your miscarriages, you decide that you're going to that you want to adopt and then you go through a really long process. Can you tell us just a little bit about kind of what that process is like for people who are thinking like, oh, I might want to adopt, like what that really means?
Sure. Well, it's different for the kind of adoption you do.
Okay.
The kind of adoption that I chose was a domestic adoption through a nonprofit agency. So that might be different than someone who adopts internationally or someone who does a foster adopt situation in which they foster a child first until it's legally emancipated and then the child can be adopted.
Okay.
So I was dating Peter and we were kind of on and off and I just decided, you know, I feel like if I'm going to be a mom, I should do it, start doing it sooner rather than later. So I started the process. I went through an agency called the Kinship Center in Orange County and you have to do a lot of classes. You have to do a lot of paperwork, a lot of background checks, obviously. I think part of it is they make you go through so much rigorous training. And it's not just training to be a parent, but it's training about adoption specifically because there's a lot of loss associated with adoption. There's obviously the loss for the child of its original parents, but also for the birth parents of the child. And then also even for the adoptive parents, there's the loss of being able to, or, you know, not having your, not every parent who adopts is infertile.
Right.
But, you know, but there's also, you know, the loss of not nursing or the loss, you know, of just maybe not having a child of your own biology, if that is, right, was important, is important to you. Yeah. So you really have to just get, you know, super well versed in all the flavors of loss. Mm. And but also I think they just weed out people who, you know, think that they, you know, on a lark, they, you know, why don't I adopt, right, a child? So it's really a commitment to the training and to the paperwork and to the thought that goes into it, and to just really, you know, shoring up your heart and shoring up, right, your, you know, your mind and your, also your logistics. Like, where are you going to put a child? Can you afford a child?
Right. So they come into your home and all that.
They do. Yeah.
It's so interesting. I wish that there was that for people who are trying to have children, just, you know, biologically. Like, there's no background check if you get pregnant. Nobody comes into your house and says, what are you going to do with this kid? Like, do you know how to be a parent? But when you adopt, they're like, we're going to get really rigorous. They should do that for people who.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's so funny. When you're in that process of adopting and waiting, and, you know, for some people it takes a long time and it's really frustrating, and you know, you don't get picked, and you're like that weird cereal flavor on the shelf, right, that nobody wants. And, right, and then, like, you see people complain about their kids and you're like, I would love to complain about like my child's boogers or, right, you know, whatever they're complaining about.
Right. So. But once you got to be Grace's mother, then you complained about her boogers, right?
Or you know, no? I mean, there's things I complain about for sure. Sure,
but
you know, but
you are cognizant.
I'm
of that.
Very, you know, I do say a prayer of gratitude every single day, mm, if not multiple times a day, if not every space in between every second for Grace, because, right, I'm so grateful to, right, be her mom.
Yeah, I think you get a different perspective going through the process, because you were in the process before Grace came into your life for 2 years.
Yeah, so the whole thing, it was like being pregnant for 2 years, but also like being pregnant for 4 days, because that's, right, how much time we had between meeting Bridget and when Grace was born.
Wow. So I won't give too much more of the story. Obviously, we know that you adopt Grace, and then it's an open adoption. For those of you who don't know, that means that the birth parents and the adoptive parents and the child, when the adoptive parents are ready, know and can communicate with one another. So as opposed to a closed adoption where there's no information exchange between the three parties. So this book, I guess the little spoiler I'll give away is that at some point in the book, Grace's parents come to be very much a part of your life. I'll put it that way.
Right. Her birth parents.
Her birth parents. Yeah.
Her birth parents became homeless and they moved in for a little while.
Yeah. So the book kind of goes on this journey where it starts with you, and then it kind of, you have all these new people in your life by the time we get to the end of the book. If you were going to give any advice to people who were thinking about adoption or who were in the process, is there anything that you would say?
I would just say, have faith, be strong, have a support network. Mm. Get rid of people who are haters in your life, mm, or, you know, or people, you know, like, just draw your boundaries, because people will say terrible things, or, you know, they might not support your choice. But I will say, you know, get your support ready.
That's awesome. And then the last thing I'll ask you about this, and then we'll dive into your books, is kind of a transition. What are some of your favorite books on adoption?
Well, the book we're going to talk about today, I won't.
We're going to talk about All You Can Ever Know by Nicole Chung for the Sex Book Club. So we'll save that, but any other ones?
Yeah. I loved Born with Teeth by, mm-hmm, Kate Mulgrew. That is a memoir, but it's a lot about her becoming a big star, mm, but it's also about her placing a child for adoption and how that affected her life and that affected her mind. And, you know, it's one act that is just will inform the rest of her life. I loved God and Jetfire by Amy Seek. It's another woman who placed a child for adoption, and what a difficult decision that was for her, and how wrenching it was. But ultimately, she felt like it was the best for her child. And I think those two books from a birth parent perspective are really important. Hugely important, actually, because birth parents do not get a good rap, especially in, you know, like, people can, you know, there's a lot of platitudes around it, like, it's the most loving thing you can do for a child, mm-hmm, or it's, you know, the greatest act of love. But in real life, the birth parents that I have talked to have been shunned, they've been insulted, they've, you know, people think they're monsters for being able to give, right, up a child. And that's actually not the case. There's a lot that goes into that decision. And it is really a loving decision right. that you have to do. So I think those books are hugely important to have that transparency into what goes into that. There's a classic book, Dan Savage's The Kid, when he and his husband, I guess they couldn't get married back then, but his right. partner adopted a baby from a homeless girl in Oregon. And then my favorite, one of my very, very favorites, and I didn't realize this is about adoption, but also one thing I talk about is almost every epic story is an adoption story.
I know. I want to talk about that.
Is Corduroy. It's the story of a little bear who gets, you know, who's forgotten and gets adopted. And I cry every time I read that.
What are some other adoption stories like in the culture? You mentioned some in your book, but I found it fascinating.
Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Dorothy's an orphan. Right. Or she's living with her
aunt and uncle
for some unknown reason. Star Wars, almost everybody in the Bible, Mad Max, This Is Us.
Right.
I mean, all of these stories, if you really think about, I mean, just start looking at stories, Superman.
Right. I feel like the Disney stories, I guess those aren't always adoption. They're usually dead mom.
A lot of dead mom and a lot of stepmother,
type
things. Yeah. But that's also about finding new family.
Right.
And a lot of times it's a prince, but it's
connected in that mythology of like not knowing your roots or not having like that. There's like a self-discovery, because that's kind of what all those stories have in common, is that this person is not rooted in family and they have to go out and
look at Frozen. I mean, their parents
I've never seen Frozen.
So in Frozen, there's two princess sisters and their parents are killed immediately and right into the story. So, I mean, if you look at, we're obsessed with it, whether it's conscious or not, we are obsessed with origin stories.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Okay, well, we'll dive in now to all your other books that aren't about adoption. And we're going to talk so much about adoption next week that I'm kind of like holding back today, because I could ask you a million questions about this. But we have so much to talk about next week that I'll save it.
It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for almost 4 years now, I have been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. They're at 52 iterations of their formula and counting. Their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and find the best quality ingredients available. So many people have asked me if AG1 is actually the real deal. And trust me, there's a reason why I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they totally obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated, and AG1 simplifies this by covering my nutritional bases and setting myself up for success in just 60 seconds each morning. AG1 ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune system, which is so important for me, especially with the germs that the mini stacks have running around and going to a cesspool called preschool. I've stayed partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product, and I genuinely look forward to drinking it every single day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/thestacks. That's drinkag1.com/thestacks. Check it out.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So let's start with two books you love and one book you hate.
Okay. The two books that I love, I've always just carried a torch for Poisonwood Bible.
Okay.
I just loved everything about that book. I don't even have a copy of it because I keep giving it away. Yeah. And then my friend Jeff Sweat wrote a book called Mayfly, mm-hmm. which was this, it's like a dystopian future Los Angeles about these teenagers. Ooh. The premise is that nobody lives past like 15, 16, 17.
Oh my God.
And so they have to sort of figure out society and figure out how to do that on their own.
Whoa.
It's really fascinating. It's super compelling. So that I love that book as well.
That sounds great.
A book I hate. I can't say I hate it because I couldn't finish it.
Okay.
I've tried several times over the years to pick up Love in the Time of Cholera, and I just always, I'm not sure if I'm like not in the right mood for it.
Yeah.
Or
just doesn't connect with
you. And I'll try again at some point, right. I'm sure, but I just.
That's how I feel about a hundred thousand Years of Solitude. I picked it up maybe 5 times, and I don't think I've gotten past page 20. I just can't do it.
Yeah, there's certain.
I don't know, and I know people love it. Not for me. What's the last great book you read?
There's a couple. So one is called Priest Daddy.
Mm.
It's a memoir, and I just felt like she's just so like wildly poetic, and the story is so, you know, for a memoir, I think to be interesting, you do have to have these like kind of crazy characters.
Totally.
In it. And so, you know, it's about her family. And then
her dad is a priest.
And then, but like the family is like super dysfunctional.
Okay.
And she's,
I've heard it's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. And just like the sheer poetry of the book is so good. Just the language it's written in. I loved it. And then like there's sort of like a shocking thing that happens and I'm not going to ruin it. But,
don't ruin it.
But so that book was really stuck with me. And then another, Girl Boner by August McLaughlin. Like, so I met August when I was doing my recording of my book.
Okay. And so you read your audiobook?
Yeah, I read my audiobook. And she gave me a copy, and I really liked her. She's like so cool and so pretty and so smart. And, you know, I'm like, I could never be friends with her. You know, and of course, like, you know, but she gave me a copy of her book, and I started reading it, and she does such a good job. It's about sexual empowerment, but she also weaves through her story in it. So it's very personal, but it's also like really informative and really, you know, there's like a diagram of like the female genitalia, and, you know, like it's just like she's, it talks just is so inclusive, and it's so it's such a smart book. So I like that book too. That's another recent one that I read. Yeah,
amazing. And what are you reading right now?
I'm reading Between the World and Me.
Ugh.
And it's I'm not reading it quickly. I have to say, like, I feel like I have to sort of digest everything. I'm at the part where he's at Howard University right now.
I love when he describes the quad.
Yeah,
so good.
Yeah, and I just had to kind of read that a couple times over because it's so, I mean, again, it's like a poem, you know, it's like a song. It's really rich. It's hard. You know, I'm a middle-class white girl and it's really important for everybody to read this book, but it's, you know, it's really rich and it's really beautiful, and it's, you know, I would like to read it slowly. I don't, it's not a book that I want to graze through.
No, that makes sense. We did an episode on the show on that book. It was one of our book club books. So I reread it for the book, and I feel like I don't even remember reading it the first time, because reading it the second time felt so different. So it's one of those books you could definitely revisit. And he reads the audiobook. So if you do revisit it, I haven't listened to it, but I've heard he's really great. And if you've ever heard his voice, his voice is amazing. I just love the way he talks. He kind of has like his New York accent kind of thing. I don't know. He's great. And if you are interested in more books like that, I do have a recommendation. Have you heard of the book Heavy that came out last year?
No.
His name's Kiese Layman, and he's also a journalist, and it's his memoir, and it's kind of, I think it's a good companion piece for Between the World and Me, because it's his memoir, and it's a very personal story of his experience of being a Black man in America, whereas Ta-Nehisi Coates' book is a little more big picture, but they're talking about the same thing. So you kind of see it from a more vulnerable, personal, and then Coates comes in from a more like structural, I don't know. They're two sides of the same coin, but they're really different and both beautifully written. And I think the two of them are two of our greatest Black current critics of culture. I guess that's what you would call them. I don't know. But so that's my recommendation for
you.
Thank you.
It's also absolutely take your time.
It's as the title suggests, very heavy. Can you read multiple books at once, or are you a one book pony, as I like to say?
I can, but it usually means that one of them will be left by the wayside. Mm-hmm. I prefer to read just one at a time, but sometimes I do.
You get stuck.
And then
with
also,
two.
right now I have Hunger and my audio.
The Roxane Gay.
So she like unfortunately, like I haven't been on a long enough trip in the last couple weeks. But I do, like, I'll listen to one and then I'll read another one.
I listened to that also. It was a tough listen. Because I feel like I wanted to slow her down because I was having to process so much. And with audio, you can't really stop it. Like, she just kept going. And I was like, oh, my God, I can't. I have to go back and listen because I zoned out because it was too much to handle. But talk about really vulnerable memoir. Oh my God. What are some books that you're excited to start reading or are on your list?
Of course, Becoming.
Me too. It's on my list.
Have you not read it yet?
No,
oh,
I haven't.
That surprises me. I know. You'd like be right all over that.
Everybody, I have it, but then everybody told me to do it on audio, so I'm waiting for having a trip.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. It's a weird thing. Everyone else is reading it, so I'm kind of like, it's good. I'll get to it, which is so weird. I don't know. But it is on my list too.
Okay, and you know, Tara West, is it Westover?
Yeah,
Educated. I just, you know, it's funny because I had ordered it. So, all right, true confession. I do look on Amazon to see where I am in the thing, and so.
Oh yes, of course.
The rankings.
Yeah,
and so under biography last week, and I don't know if this is true this week because actually I haven't looked this week, but last week I was in front of Michelle Obama and I was in front of Tara. So I was like, oh, I should just, you know, order those books to see whose company I'm in. And so I had ordered it, and then I heard her on the radio, and I kind of came in the middle, and I'm like, oh, I bet this is her, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was like such a great interview, and it was NPR, I think. And I'm just really excited to read that book.
I've heard people love it. Are you big on memoir? Do you like memoir?
I do like, well, you know, I feel like I had to really, like, once I was in, you know, one of the many, many, many drafts of Rock Needs River, I felt like I really need to start studying memoir more. Mm-hmm. Like, there's memoirs that I love. Like, I love the memoir of, like, Lucille Ball, you know, and things like that. But, and, like, things that I had read, but I really felt like I needed to become a student of
the
memoir.
Yeah.
And so that's really kind of been my world in the last year or so.
And now that your book is out in the world, are you still, like, finding that you enjoy memoir?
I feel like I still have to study. I don't know. Even though, it's done, but I'm still like, I don't know. I still feel like I'm studying. Yeah.
I love a good, like, dark memoir. I don't love like I'm a comedian. Like, I had a hard time in Hollywood. I like terrible things happened, or like, this
like
is really
Glass Castle.
I never read Glass Castle, but everybody tells me I should.
Oh, yeah.
But
if you like
that,
if you like
a
terrible things happening memoir,
I do.
You should read that.
I like terrible things happening just in general, but yes, in memoir also. Well, how do you pick your next book if you're not studying memoir, like in just in general.
People I know. Yeah. It turns out I know a lot of writers and
well, you are a writer, yeah. So that makes sense.
Yeah. So you know, whether it's like a cookbook or you know, a memoir or a novel. My friend Mary Adkins just wrote one called When You Read This, mm-hmm. and that's coming out around the same time, I think. So I'm excited to read that. So right now I'm just trying to like get through the people's books that I know. And then plus, you know, the other ones that we mentioned.
What's a really good book that someone has recommended to you?
Well, it's hilariously, I recommend, well, so someone once recommended He's Just Not That Into You, and it's the book I probably recommend the most to other people. So
that's amazing. Yeah. It just resonated with you.
Well, the great thing about that book, it's an older book, yeah. and for people who don't know what it is, it basically explains like the mind of I'm sort of a perpetual, like I'm a monogamist, but I can't seem to like make things, like things just haven't really worked out for me in that way. And it there was a time where like I would just keep dating and like getting ghosted or getting, you know, and so it really helped me understood like, well, first, who are you picking?
Right.
And, you know, are they truly available? And then second, you know, if someone's not calling, like I think women read into you know, messages like it's tea leaves, like, oh, well, if he said let's talk later, did he really mean let's talk later,
right.
You know, or
right.
those things. But it was basically like, if he doesn't track you down, he's not into you,
right?
Which was really helpful. It's like a very clear directive. And so like whenever somebody is like wondering about a relationship, I just send them that book.
And that book was, I remember that book, and that book was kind of like changed the way that we talk about dating now. Like when that book came out, I felt like He's Just Not That Into was really revolutionary. And now I feel like that's the kind of advice that women give each other all the time. Like, oh, well, did he call you? Okay, then he's not into it. Like, move on. And I feel like, you know, 15 years ago, or I guess more than that, probably now, probably came out in the
probably
90s.
Probably
20, early 25 20, years
early,
ago.
Early 2000s, I think,
oh,
yeah.
I feel older all of a sudden. But that it used to be like, yeah, oh, well, maybe you need to call him again and like, don't call after 3 days and blah, blah, blah. And now it's just like, oh, he's not getting back to you. Like, you can move on.
Right,
so
that
it kind of shifted.
Yeah, it was like around the same time as the rules came out. And the rules, like that just felt like very like anti-feminist and archaic, and you're supposed to play a certain amount of games. But in a way, like, it's kind of the same idea. Like, if someone's into you, they'll find you.
Yes. And it makes so much sense when you say it like that. But it does sometimes feel like when your emotions are involved, like, oh, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt and like, blah, blah, blah.
It's working.
Yeah. Yeah. But it has definitely changed the dating, like the way that we as women, I think specifically, talk about dating just in the culture.
And we as straight women, like, I feel like it's probably like a whole different playing field for, you know, like women of other sexuality and men of other sexuality as well, you know.
Yeah. But I think some of it holds true. Like, if whoever it is isn't calling you or like doesn't want you to meet their friends or doesn't want to hang out on prime hangout times, like there's something else going on regardless. But that is a great point that I'm sure the dynamics change and shift depending on, you know, sexuality. So what's a good book that you've received as a gift?
You know, my friend Kaumudi wrote a beautiful memoir. She's Indian, but she's also grew up much of her life in Canada. Mm-hmm. And she wrote one called Shared Tables, Family Stories and Recipes from Pune to LA. Mm. And she is just such a beautiful writer. It's, you know, I wouldn't call it a dark memoir like you and I were talking about. Like, there's not a lot of conflict in it, but it's just like beautiful language, beautiful food. It helped me understand her a little better. It's such a reverent love letter to her family and how important that is to her and how important food is to so. And I also feel like it's very universal too, because for so many families, food is critical. Like it's a critical part of a family's culture,
right?
You know, not just like wherever you're from culture, but like that family's culture.
Right.
Like my cousin Jeannie's grits with cheese at Thanksgiving is like a very important part of our family's culture, you know?
That's so interesting. As someone who's written a memoir, you just made me think of this. Do you feel I guess your book is out in the world now a little bit and will be more so out in the world, I guess, starting on February 1st. But do you feel like when you talk to people now who you know have read your book that they like see you in a different way, or like do you feel a different sense of vulnerability because they've read more intimate details of your life?
I feel like people I know a lot of this stuff, okay. But people have actually called me and said, I had no idea about, you know,
right.
your parents, or I had no idea about, right. you know, certain aspects. So, and I don't, it's not so much people who I know, I like, that doesn't bother me.
Yeah, more strangers.
Yeah, but it's like it's a little unnerving that strangers know.
Right.
And then the bad reviews on Amazon, like basically it's not that they just hate the book. They hate me and every
sure.
life choice that I've ever made.
Sure.
And they think I shouldn't be a mother. And they, you know, like all right. this like crazy out there. And that doesn't actually bother me, because that's like going up to someone like in the supermarket and saying, like, what do you think of my book?
Right.
You know, like
right.
you just
exactly.
wouldn't do that. So.
Right. And I mean, we talk a lot about reviews on this show because I think it's a really important part of reading. And I feel an obligation as someone who does review books that there's like to write a good review. Not only does it incorporate the book, but it says so much about the person reviewing the book. Like every review I ever write is basically all about me, right? It's my opinion of what you've said. It's my experience and how that's affected what you've said. It's my understanding of something. You know, I'll read a book and I'll know zero things about the subject before I read it. And then I'll be like, oh, now I have all these new ideas and thoughts that I'm grappling with. So I feel like that's true for a good and a bad review, right? That it's like, this is so much more about that person and what they have to say and how your book resonated with them than it is, no offense, about your book.
Right, right. Like, I mean, and I get it. Like, my book is really, it's uncomfortable
yeah,
for some people.
Definite,
it's
yeah.
uncomfortable because, like, I feel like I have to put the cringeworthy
yeah,
moments in
there. There's definitely cringeworthy stuff.
And also, like, every chance I got, I made myself the asshole. Like, in yeah. any conflict with anybody, like, I really felt like it was important to, like, to understand what my part
right.
in that was
right.
and to take the fall for it.
There's
you know?
Definitely one section I'm thinking of, which I won't give too much away, but it involves a chat room.
Oh.
And that part I was yeah. like, whew, but you handle, I mean, you, in the book, you handle it well, but in the moment I was like, oh, I'm so glad I wasn't in that chat room.
It was awful. I mean, it was horrible and it was
right.
awful and it was embarrassing. But I
right.
also feel like.
But you say that.
Yeah. Like, hey, people who are adopting, don't do this.
Yeah. Warning sign.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Reviews are tough, especially places like Amazon or like Yelp. Like, oh, scary.
My real estate agent gave me like 3 stars and I'm like, dude, what are you like? What?
You're like, well, I'm not buying a house from you again.
Yeah,
pal.
No, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know how many of you there are?
Yeah.
Are you someone who sets reading goals for yourself or has like things that you wish were different about your reading and how you read?
I definitely wish I had more time. I wish I could read during the day. But I work and I'm a single mom. So that's real. Like just
not
reading for pleasure is not yeah it's just not
right.
possible and then I've been going to bed really early. I basically have been like exhausted and I'm falling asleep with Grace sometimes and so I just wish I had more time.
Yeah. Are there besides memoir, are there other genres that you really love or genres that you're just like not into?
I love novels.
Okay.
I love books about food. Let's see. I would like to sci-fi more.
Okay. But you don't really.
I just haven't. You know, I just feel like there's so many other things in front of it.
Right.
What else? And also like Monday morning political quarterbacking.
You're not into that.
I just feel like.
I don't like recent politic books. Like I don't like I'm not into like Jim Comey's book. Like I don't like. If it is happening and you're writing about it, I'm not that into it. But I do like political current like criticism, which is
yes,
like, you know, like things that are talking about this exact moment. You have to read them in the moment. Like I went back and read Rebecca Solnit's book, Men Explain Things to Me this year. And I was like, this book is so dated. Like this isn't how we talk about feminism anymore. Like. And it was such a weird feeling because I know people love that book, but I just read it 5 years too late. So I feel like those books you have to read right in the moment. But I don't like the like memoir, you know, or like I wasn't interested in fear. It was like too soon.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, political books. Like honestly, like I don't give a shit about like Donald Trump's books. You know, like he wrote one. I remember it was like on the sale table at Barnes and Noble. It's called Crippled America.
No, thank you.
And like, I just like, no, like those are just not that interesting to me. Yeah. And I think for the very reason you're just saying, like they don't all stand up.
Right. Yeah. There's some that are really good in the moment, but most of them just, they feel like in 6 months, you're like, this is a waste of my time. Do you have favorite authors?
Oh my gosh, I do. And I wrote them down so I don't, let's see.
So you don't forget anybody.
Let's see. So Isabel Allende is always on my list. Anna Quinlan, Barbara Kingsolver, Maya Angelou. Someone that's influenced me quite a bit is, she used to go by Barbara Stanley. Now her name's Barbara Husson, but she writes a lot about women and money.
Mm.
And she is just like, she's like really empowering to, you know, for women to go make your money, think big, aim high. And I've read all of her books, and I just feel like she's like such an important voice in feminism and money and business and spirituality as well, because a lot of the money making is an inside game.
Right. Right. That's so true. Do you read, you do audiobooks sometimes.
Yeah.
And you read hard books. Do you ever do like Kindle?
You know, I have a Kindle.
And you don't.
And I do a little bit. Like if I have to read something soon, like right away, like I downloaded this book called The Hormone Replacement Diet.
Okay.
It's basically like I felt like my metabolism had stopped. And I was like, I can't wait anymore. I need to read this right
away.
To know. You know, and so I downloaded that and read that. But I can't really work. Like, I don't know how it works.
I don't even have one. I'm terrified of it. We're going on a 3-week vacation and I'm going to borrow my best girlfriend.
I was going to say you could borrow mine if you want.
But she's like, I don't know how it works either. I'm like, well, this isn't going to help. How do you like to read, like, physically? Where do you like to be? Like, what's your ideal reading setup?
So my child is asleep.
Yes.
Or at a sleepover.
Or away.
Yeah. And I have probably been, like, well-fed, taken a bath, clean sheets, and in bed.
So you're at a hotel, basically, is what you're saying. So your kid's somewhere and you're on vacation. Sounds great. I like to read in the bath.
I do too.
I love that.
I do too, but I only read like Oprah in the bath because I don't want to ruin my book.
Oh, I read All You Can Ever Know in the bath. I spent a good chunk of that in the bath, like crying and reading. Or like, you know that feeling where you want to cry, but you're not, like the tears aren't coming, but you're feeling like, this is, I'm heavy. Like that's how I felt in the bath reading.
I'm looking at you right now and my mouth is hanging open because I had that very conversation about that feeling last night with Grace.
Oh my gosh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, she was talking about how she felt invisible to her friends. Ooh. And I was like, said the exact same thing. Do you feel? And she would like look like she wanted to cry and she couldn't.
Yeah,
and
it just like wasn't
coming. Yeah. And I was like, you know, sometimes we feel like we have to cry, but we can't actually make the tears come out.
That's
like,
so true.
It's amazing that you just said that. Amazing.
Well, speaking of crying, what's the last book that made you cry?
What is the last book that does it sound like ridiculous and horrible if I say my own?
No.
Yeah. When I was reading it, there were parts of it that made me cry.
Wow. I love that. Yeah. I think that's not ridiculous at all. What about the last book that made you laugh?
Instant Mom by Nia Vardalos. Am I saying Vardalos?
She's the one from Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Big Fat Greek Wedding. She wrote an amazing book about becoming – that's also a favorite adoption book, by the way. It's about becoming a mom through adoption. And it was challenging because she had a 3-year-old child instead of a newborn. So sometimes when you adopt an older child, there are some, you know, attachment issues and behavioral challenges. And sure. But she is so funny. I mean, she is just a funny person. And there were just so many times in that book where I just bust out laughing. And it was published a while ago, but I just read it in the last couple months. But it's hilarious. Mm. It's just really funny.
That's awesome. What about a book that made you angry?
Oh, The Glass Castle.
Mm.
And I know that you still have to read that one, but I got so angry because just like how badly people parent and there's all, it's also coupled with love, but like, really, like, are you trying to kill your children?
Right.
You know, like just the anger of like people slipping through the cracks.
This
like
is
that.
Why we need those courses for people who are having children who are not adopting.
Oh, I know.
Wouldn't that be so nice if there was, I mean, obviously we're not getting any new government services, but if there was like a government service that helped people to become a parent.
Well, you know, like in Scandinavian countries, they not only like give you a lot of time off,
like a whole
year for parental leave, they bring you a box with like, here's all the things you could have for your baby. And then they like send people over and help you understand how to parent.
Right.
And, you know, like it's not that hard a thing to do. It's it's like really probably the most humane way to bring a child into the world.
I mean,
you know?
Yes, because there's so much anxiety around being a parent. And if you were not parented well, you know, you behave what you know. And I think a lot of people always talk about like, oh, I'm becoming my mother, like I'm becoming my father. And that's because that's how you were parented. So the idea that we wouldn't have people who are teaching us, you know, you have to take a test to drive, you have to take a test, you know, it's like nobody has to take a test to get married or have kids. And it might be smart if you did.
Exactly.
Like to make sure that you were doing it right. But, you know.
And respecting people's reproductive freedom. You know, like there's that part of it too.
Of course.
You know,
of course.
And so, yeah, no, it's just like people, it's like people are just shitty parents. You know?
That's right. I mean, people are just shitty people too.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like shitty people out there.
Yeah. And it would be really great if we had someone who was like, you know what, maybe you should hold off on parenting. But of course, then that gets into who can have kids and who can't. And like, you know, that's a whole other story. But it would be nice if that was an option. I would love a box if I got pregnant.
Yeah.
Said, like, here's how a diaper works. Like, this is what you do now. You have a creature in your house. Not going to happen. Are there any books that you've read that you're embarrassed about having read or any books that you've never read that you're embarrassed about never having read?
You know, I don't really associate embarrassment with that. I mean, there's things like, oh God, what's the one where they turn into vampires and then there's the
Twilight? Yeah.
You know,
that's a common answer.
I mean, I can't say I'm embarrassed.
Right.
By that, because I feel like you should read everything.
Right.
I mean, you should read like cereal boxes and comic books and the, you know, bill from your utility, you know, that tells you how to save energy. And, you know, I just feel like you should just read everything.
Just read.
I don't think you should be embarrassed. Yeah.
What about anything that you're like, I can't believe I've never read this?
Oh, there's like, honestly,
that list is so long.
That was, that's like such a hugely long list. I mean, I started to try to tackle those. And so I read like Clockwork Orange because I hadn't read Clockwork Orange. And, you know, so there are some books like that I felt like I had to tackle, but like for who?
Right.
You know,
right.
Well, I don't know. Love in the Time of Cholera.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Well, you've tried at least.
Yeah, I tried.
It's true that there's this weird like obligation feeling around certain books that you like should have read. Like I know people are always shocked. I've never read Beloved. And that's a book that people are like, you should have read that. And I'm like, yeah, I just haven't.
Sorry,
like,
what's Beloved?
By Toni Morrison?
I've never read it.
Oh, yeah. It's like her most famous. It became Oprah made it into a movie, but it's a Toni Morrison classic. So
yep.
That's
never,
a book. I can't believe I've never heard of that. I'm shocked.
I'm sure I've heard of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'm sure you have.
Like,
it was a movie, like a made for TV movie that Oprah was a part of. I think Oprah was in it maybe. Anyways, do you have any favorite books from childhood? Or I'll open it up. A favorite book that you read or read to Grace besides Corduroy?
I cannot wait till she has the attention span for Harriet the Spy.
Mm.
I love that book so much. I mean, I must have gone through that a million times. Mm. I went through The Diary of Anne Frank a million times, even to the point where I think I might be reincarnated from the Holocaust.
Whoa.
I know. It's crazy. But I once told that to my friend. And then she like turned me on to this like whole group of people that also feel like that.
Wow.
So I mean, there's no way to prove that,
right,
really.
Sure.
But I just, yeah. So, but
did you ever read Many Lives, Many Masters?
No.
The book about reincarnation?
No.
Oh, just made me think of that.
Write that down too.
Yeah, Many Lives, Many Masters. When I was a kid, I really liked Number of the Stars. Did you ever read that? It's a book, another book about the Holocaust. It's fiction. I think I read it maybe in like fifth or sixth grade, but it was kind of like the fictionalized Anne Frank companion piece. Anyways, if that's something you're into, maybe.
Number of the Stars.
Okay. Yeah. We love that book. It just dawned on me. I hadn't thought about it. What about a book that you love where you didn't feel like you saw yourself reflected back? Because I often feel like people have a, where people feel like they can't read something because they don't relate to it. And I feel like there's so many books that I've loved that have nothing to do with me. So I'm always curious if people have that same experience.
I mean, there's so many books by like older white men mm-hmm. that I don't right. really resonate with. Like, well, one of them is Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Like, I love that book mm-hmm. so much because it's like so crazy. Yeah, but yeah. like, would I ever do a ton of drugs and no. like go on that kind of road trip? Nope.
Probably not.
But like, I can't even like have a glass of wine and drive. So I
don't. Right. What about someone to write your life story? I mean, you kind of did it.
Anna Quinlan. I feel like, you know, but also she's somebody that I grew up reading her mm-hmm. on the subway and, you know, mm. in the newspaper. And then, you know, like she also is so good at novels, but she's so good at memoirs and she's so easy. And I just admire her so much.
What about something that you've read that you want to see turned into a TV show or movie?
There's a couple of them. So the book that I mentioned before, Mayfly, mm-hmm. I think would be such an
that
amazing.
That sounds like a total movie when yeah. you explained it.
No, yeah. You'd be like, they don't pronounce all the words right. Like mm-hmm. Hollywood is like Hollywood mm-hmm. and like they go by Disneyland but they don't know that that's Disney, like that right. was a park. Like they just right. like, so such, so good. And then Jen Brody wrote a trilogy called The 13 Continuums, mm-hmm. Which is fascinating. And it's about like what happens sort of after everything goes south on Earth. And then, you know, like they're like these people, they like live in these submarines. And I'm not explaining it well at all.
It's okay.
at all. But it's such a cinematic book.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay. Well, I have my last question for you, which is always my favorite. And I stole it from the New York Times. If you could require the current president of the United States to read one book, what would it be?
Beloved. No, basically my answer is anything by a woman of color.
Yeah.
Because it's so far from his worldview.
Yeah.
And to understand sexism, systemic racism, like all of the thing, you know, to just like justice. Yeah, anything by a woman of color, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love
Omarosa,
that.
Except Omarosa, maybe.
Yeah. Not necessarily. Yeah, there's a few women of color maybe yeah. we pass up, but yeah, no. That's so true.
You know, like Maya Angelou, sure. Toni Morrison, Oprah, you know, like right. anybody.
Anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree with that. All right, Vanessa, thank you so much. So next week we're going to be back. We're going to be talking about All You Can Ever Know by Nicole Chung, which is her memoir about her experience being adopted. And that will be next Wednesday. And yeah, thank you so much for being here.
You're so delightful. Thank you, Tracy. I loved it.
Thank you. And we'll see you guys in the stacks. Okay, that does it for us today on The Stacks. I want to say thank you so much to author Vanessa McGrady. I'd also like to say thank you to Lucy Seelag at Little A and Nicole Dewey at Shreve Williams for sending me a copy of Rock Needs River. You can get your own copy of Rock Needs River wherever you get your books. For more from The Stacks, follow us on our social media, at The Stacks Pod on Instagram and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter. And check out our website, thestackspodcast.com. To join The Stacks Pack and get inside access to the show, like perks and our virtual book club, go to patreon.com/thestacks and join the fun. Make sure you're subscribed to this show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the podcast. Our graphic designer is Robin McCright, and our theme music is from Tagirages. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas. I will see you in the stacks.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.